Oceana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT presents Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Booger, up and in! With 2 seconds left, Notre Dame leads!
Malpas again, backhands, he scores!
Down to the corner, Jablonski, three is good!
Andrew steps in, he's going to throw deep for T.Y., he's got it!
Flips to Jenkins, three for the win, it's good! Villanova wins it!
He tied, it is a touchdown! New England wins!
Adios! Cubs win their ninth in a row!
Miles Boykin is in the end zone!
The Irish have come back!
Your hosts are Eric Hansen and Darren Pritchett.
This is Eric Hansen with the South Bend Tribune. Darren Pritchett will be joining me momentarily from the lovely state of Iowa. And we've got a lot of stuff to talk about today, including Tyler James joining us at the bottom of the hour with the ND Insider football recruiting update. Lots of stuff going on with ND football in regards with its recruiting, which includes Quinn Carroll, committing this week, the top player in Minnesota, an offensive tackle from Medina. And but there's a lot of other things going on with that, and we'll get to some of that recruiting stuff a little later in the show. We're going to talk initially here a little bit about the Notre Dame offense under Chip Long. Chip Long is in his second year as Notre Dame's offensive coordinator. Notre Dame had a pretty good year offensively. If you take out the Miami games and the Georgia games and so forth. Okay, and now we are joined by Darren Pritchett, who has much more to say on this topic. Hey, Darren, how are you doing?
I'm here. I'm ready to go.
All right. Well,
I was waiting for someone to put me on the air.
Well, you were on the air, and I was tap dancing until you were ready.
Well, so, I've been ready. I've been trying to talk to everybody down the line that I can't hear anything, but now I can hear you, so I can start talking for real now. So we are going to talk about this Fighting Irish offense in 2018. Chip Long has talked about this being a power run play action team. Will we see more play action this year? Any concern about Yu Darvish with his start with the Cubs? We'll get to that. You've talked about Tyler James coming up at the bottom of the hour. Coming up at the start of next hour, Nico Cavadas, Notre Dame freshman baseball player, and a young man who had a great baseball career at Penn High School. He will join us live to talk about his freshman season that has gone very well, including on Tuesday against Western Michigan, went 3-for-3 with a couple of runs scored and 2 runs batted in. The Irish wrap up their home schedule against Pittsburgh at X Stadium Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. We'll have rapid fire and some South Bend Cubs conversation as well. We are scheduled to have Cubs baseball tonight here in Cedar Rapids. The tarp is on the field right now. It's been raining for about 45 minutes. And the forecast, according to the meteorologists in Cedar Rapids, showers and thunderstorms should develop pretty much any time now throughout the evening. So I would say this game is up in the air, whether we're going to play it or not. Right now, it's a light rain, but we had a heavy downpour just a little bit ago, and there was a ton of stuff to our north that just missed us. So as of right now, we're still scheduled to play baseball, but Mother Nature in control of the proceedings. Sports be brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds by Goshen Heart and Vascular. Be the hero your heart deserves. Visit GoshenHeartAndVascular.org. Laven Insurance, the agency that rocks. See why at LavenInsurance.com. And by Blackthorn Golf Club. Don't forget about the Blackthorn card. It gets you plenty of savings for rounds of golf at Blackthorn Golf Club. Eric, let's begin. Before we get to some recruiting news, let's talk about the current state of this Fighting Irish football team. And in March, Irish offensive coordinator Chip Long had this to say about his offense, quote, "We're a run play action team. That's where it starts, and that's where it will always start. Then being able to add the rest of the offense into it and make it a tough group to compete with," end quote. That was Chip Long, the Irish offensive coordinator, in March. Well, we saw the power run game last year, Eric. It was one of the best run games in the country, despite it being slowed down in November. Overall, excellent run season for this Fighting Irish football team. But we've heard about the play-action game. That was something that was talked about before last year. We did not see it a whole lot. Eric, does this just come down to simply the fear of putting the ball up in the air down the field with the play-action game? Or why do you think we didn't see that as much as possibly we anticipated? Or did we kind of overestimate the play-action game last year?
Well, I think when your quarterback is completing less than 50% of his passes, the play-action game isn't as effective, because the defenses are kind of dictating, at least the really good defenses, are kind of dictating your play call, because they're getting you into third and longs. And if they know you're in third and long and have a quarterback that's struggling, they know what's coming. Whether you fake it to the running back or not, they know it's going to be a pass. And I think Notre Dame found itself in those situations too often against the Miamis, the Stanfords, and the Georgias. So I don't think it worked. When you look, and certainly they want to be better balanced, and when you look at the components this spring, they're moving in that direction. But Darren, last year, Notre Dame's ranking in total offense 27th was tied for its best of the Kelly era. 24th in scoring offense, by far the best of the Kelly era. But rushing was 7th, and passing was 102nd.
Mm-hmm.
So the best rushing mark of the Kelly era, though by far the worst passing mark of the Kelly era, and then pass efficiency 101, by far the worst of the Kelly era. So that discrepancy, that gap, Notre Dame's offense to a certain extent was predictable, at least in terms of down and distance. So that, unless you were going to play action on first down, I think teams were willing to take that chance. And so you just have to have a better passing game. Normally, what the problem is when you don't have a good play action game is that the running game is not something that teams are sold on, and they don't bite on it. But with Notre Dame, it was kind of the opposite effect. But as we saw in the spring, we feel like there were some good signs toward this becoming a more balanced offense and possibly a more potent offense.
And that's the shame of it. With that running game last year, Eric, just imagine what you could have done in that play-action game. Did not turn out that way, and you just started to turn the conversation to 2018. Do you have the wide receivers in place, the ability to get deep down the field where the play-action game could be very effective?
Well, I think you have a wide receiver in Miles Boykin that is kind of the opposite of what Notre Dame's had, in that their alpha receiver is on the boundary side. And Brian Kelly seems to feel like if you try to cover him one-on-one, you are asking for touchdowns and first downs, and he just doesn't think people can match up with him one-on-one. Normally, it's been the other side that's been a problem for opposing defenses, with Will Fuller and, to a certain extent, Torrey Hunter and Kevin Stefferson. But for Notre Dame to be really good offensively, they need both. They need that dominant receiver on the boundary, and they need that guy that can stretch a defense on the wide side of the field. And right now they are putting their chips on Chase Claypool as being that guy. And at times this spring we saw that. But they didn't see enough consistency from Chase that they feel uber confident about that position. And if that's the case going into fall, then Braden Lindsay and Kevin Austin are going to get a look there. Now, Kevin Austin doesn't project as a Will Fuller type receiver, but he's right, awfully advanced for a freshman. Braden Lindsay has track speed. Now, how that translates to college football, we'll get a better idea in June, but he certainly has the high-end speed that you look for in that receiving position. We'll have to see how polished he can be. Remember, Will Fuller didn't have dominant numbers as a freshman. You know, he was kind of, you know, a weapon here or there and a decoy, but he wasn't a guy that they consistently went to as they did in his sophomore and junior season. So there's still ways to have to kind of piece this together. I also think, Darren, that the tight end game is going to be more prolific. Whether Alize Mack is consistent or not, there are two guys now that are really high-end tight ends that are either going to replace him or complement him. And that's Brock Wright and Cole Kmet. So, you know, there's some other positives there. Avery Davis somehow fits into this. Chris Finck in the slot. But the best case scenario for Notre Dame is for people to say, wow, Chase Claypool has really started to realize his potential.
And for this to become a play-action team, two things need to happen. You better have good pass protection. That includes the running backs. And also, you have to be able to run the ball well enough in order for teams to worry about the play-action game. So, Eric, after watching the spring, I know it wasn't emphasized a whole lot, a lot of focus on the passing game during the spring. Are you convinced they will be able to run the football well enough for that play-action game to be a major factor for the squad?
I think so, provided that there's good health. And that wasn't a given last year, Darren. You know, I think that there's good depth there right now, especially because you have the two hybrid players thrown in there, Jafar Armstrong and Avery Davis. I think mm-hmm. they show plenty of potential. But again, they can't have an August fade. That's what happens sometimes with spring surprises. There's an August fade. I'm not convinced either one of them is going to fade, but you have to kind of prove that. But this is kind of like a pitching rotation. If you take Dexter Williams off the top of the rotation and Tony Jones Jr. is your number one back, and then you have the hybrid mm-hmm. guys and you have the two freshmen, Jameer Smith and Sebo Flemister, that's not as formidable because Dexter has a different skill set than the others do. It's an incomplete skill set on some days, but he has that burst. He has that hit the hole quick burst that really none of the others have. And if you take him out of that, there are going to be games like Georgia and Stanford where teams just stack the box and really make it difficult for you to get going and get into the open field. Dexter is kind of a part of the antidote to that. So it's very important not only that he's focused, but he's healthy.
Okay, so I'm going to put you in the offensive coordinator seat for a second. It's first down and 10 for the Irish from their own 40-yard line. They're going to go play action. What running back do you have on the field to help with pass pro?
You know what? Okay, so first and 10 from the 40. I'm not going with Dexter there yet. I have to see more of it in August. I thought he improved. So for me, it's either going to be Tony Jones Jr. or Avery Davis, because with either of those guys, I can do something pretty creative formationally that can make the defense have a mismatch. You know, because I can split Avery Davis out. I can put him in the backfield. I can put him with two backs. Or I can have a trick play where he throws the ball. So he would be my preference over Dexter right now.
Interesting.
But I want Dexter to be a guy that can carry the ball 15 to 20 times a game. But in that particular scenario, until I see it on an everyday basis with Dexter, and he was much improved this spring. But I mean, there's a reason Brian Kelly wasn't crowing about Dexter Williams at the end of a spring like you normally would be with your number one back. You know, there was no two trucking, you know, coming out of spring.
Well, you've got a lot of good choices at running back, but it would be nice, Eric, if we got to the point where the coaching staff trusted Dexter and pass pro, because having Dexter on the field and have that home run speed in the backfield would really help the play action game. That would really put a lot more pressure on the defense.
I agree. And I think we'll see a rotation, but you put me in the position of offensive coordinator, and I was trying to think of my assets and what would work best in that position. And if I had one play to call, if Chip Long says, Eric, this is your play, and then get back in the press box for the rest of the game, that's who I would want on the field.
So are you going to be upstairs or downstairs as offensive coordinator?
I want to be upstairs because there's food up there.
Okay, that's a good choice. You're always thinking ahead. So that's some thoughts on the play-action game for Notre Dame and the possibilities this fall with that part of the offense possibly being on display. What about the zone read? You saw a lot of practice time this year. or I should say this spring. I'm going to say this as my opinion. I really don't feel like Brandon Wimbush at times was overly comfortable in the zone read, and I only say that because you could pick out a lot of points in games where it sure looked like that the defensive end was coming inside and that outside was open, and he still handed the football off. I guess two-part question, am I being fair? And number two, is the zone read going to be a big part of this offense?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't a big part of Brandon Wimbush before he got to Notre Dame, and it was something he had to really work on. And we talked about this a little bit going into last year. We thought the run game with the quarterback might look different because Brandon's magic is really when things break down and he has to run, and also some planned quarterback runs. But I think what happened in November, Darren, was he had that hand injury. I think it was against Wake Forest right at the end of October, right at the beginning of November. And I don't know that he was as comfortable running the ball at that point. And so it seemed like he handed off to Adams a lot more than he should have. Now, was he making a bad read, or was he trying to protect that hand? And that's kind of what we don't know. But I think, you know, we have to see a little bit more of it in August. We saw so little of it in practice in the spring just because of how much they were working on the passing game. And also that, you know, in March and April, if he keeps the ball, we don't get a true sense of what's happening, you know, what would happen on that play. You know, is he going to get tackled for a two-yard loss? Is he going to break a tackle and run for 20 yards? We don't know because nobody can get close to him. But the coaches sure have to evaluate, and perhaps they were able to see whether Brandon was making the right reads. But we just didn't see a lot of it. So I need to kind of see that in August to say, yeah, he's improved a lot with that, or he hasn't. I know he's worked on it, but his emphasis was getting his passing game going. And I don't know that it has to be a huge part of who they are. I mean, it can be a staple without being your bread and butter. But I still think there are ways with Brandon Wimbush that are different than the other quarterbacks Notre Dame's had, where you just get him out on the edge with a run-pass option, and that's maybe more effective than a whole bunch of zone read.
Interesting. Well, I know you touched on this a second ago as we were discussing the possibility of the play-action game, but Cole Kmet's a really interesting guy in this whole conversation. Really good as an inline blocker, the ability to catch the football. He's one of those players, Eric, that you're not going to telegraph what exactly you're going to do because he can do a lot of things well for this offense. Whereas if you have like an Alize Mack on the field, maybe that means something different to the opposition. Cole Kmet kind of brings a lot of neutrality.
I think he does, and what I noticed in practice, and again, you know, we're not in there every day, but on the media days, I thought he was really good in the red zone. He was somebody that you really noticed in the red zone that the quarterbacks had confidence in and that was able to finish a play in the red zone. And I'll tell you what, Alize Mack had a tremendous spring all the way around, but Kmet was a great compliment there. And then you go and I thought Brock Wright, what little we saw of him once he had full contact, I thought there's something there as well with him. We'll see more of him in August, but Kmet in the red zone was really intriguing to me.
So would you say Brock Wright's going to be a tight end where it's not going to telegraph what they may do?
I agree. I think Brock Wright is a complete... He's a blocker, and he's a really good receiver. I mean, there's a reason that those guys were 1-2, 2-3, 1-3 by the recruiting services coming out of high school because they were complete. You know, there are guys like Tommy Tremble, for example, when he shows up, he's going to be really interesting to watch, but he's not going to block a whole lot of people right now in his career. He's just not at that point. He's a guy that's going to be a flex tight end and create some mismatches there, but he is... You know, you see him on the field, he's likely not going to block somebody.
Eric Hansen, Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune. I'm Darren Pritchett. That's a segment on the Irish run game and the play-action possibilities for Chip Long this fall. Coming up next, we turn our attention to Notre Dame football recruiting. We'll get Tyler James' thoughts on the commitment of Quinn Carroll. Who else are the Irish targeting along the offensive line? And he's got defensive end news, plus how about a 2021 class offer? He's got all the details coming up next in our IndyInsider.com recruiting update from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
Budweiser's weekday sports beat continues on 96.1 FM WSBT with the NDInsider.com recruiting update. Here's Darren Pritchett, Eric Hansen, and the South Bend Tribune's Fighting Irish football recruiting insider, Tyler James.
Tyler's ready to roll with the latest Fighting Irish football recruiting news. He joins us every Thursday at 5:30. And Tyler, had I known that the Irish football program was looking at a player from Edina, Minnesota, we could have called a handful of former and current Irish hockey players from Edina, Minnesota to tell them all about the great things about the University of Notre Dame. Not that the football program needs any help, but boy, Edina is a pipeline through the years for Notre Dame hockey. Now they have a football player coming from Edina, Minnesota. And Tyler, everything we read, this is an elite offensive lineman, Quinn Carroll. What is your read on this player?
Well, I can tell you, I would not want to see Quinn Carroll headed my way on ice. That would be dangerous. Quinn Carroll is a 6'6", 290-pound offensive tackle. I think he probably the best lineman that Notre Dame has in either the 2018 or 2019 class right now. Very good power, explosion, balanced. I think he could play either guard or tackle. I see a little bit of a Tommy Kramer in him, so I don't know. I think most people project him as a tackle, but I wouldn't be surprised if he ended up sliding inside. He has good footwork in his pass blocking in the limited clips that I've seen. Pass blocking is usually kind of the hardest thing to project with a lot of these recruits based on what they do in high school, because some of these guys don't play in programs that pass the ball all the time, so you don't get to see that on film as much. But you kind of just based off what you see, how they keep their feet and how they keep balance, and he seems to be a guy that can do that with relative ease and moves very well for his size. So to go get him out of Minnesota, I know Minnesota certainly really wanted him, and there are lots of other big time programs that were coming after him. It's a big recruiting win for Jeff Quinn.
Tyler, you know, in terms of the Brian Kelly era, I think only maybe Quentin Nelson was ranked higher than him where Quinn is at this point, and maybe Tommy Kramer was in that same ballpark. But in terms of high-end ceiling-type potential with this guy, I mean, are we talking a guy that could be a first-round draft choice someday, or is it just so hard to tell with offensive linemen at this stage of their career?
Well, I can tell you Tom Lemming isn't afraid to say that he could see him as a first-round draft pick. He told me that back in February, and that was well before we knew whether he was going to end up at Notre Dame or somewhere else. He said he felt like that's how good Quinn Carroll is, and he's actually called him a five-star prospect in his mind. I know rivals in 24/7 Sports have him as a four-star recruit. But I do think that is possible. I think, for me, it's tough, like I was mentioning, with the pass blocking. I think that's such a critical part of being an elite offensive tackle that I haven't seen enough of him in that regard to be able to feel comfortable. Obviously, I think it'd be hard to feel comfortable about saying that about anyone, but I do think that it seems like the tool set is there. He seems to be a bright kid, and certainly we'll see if Jeff Quinn can develop him in the same way that Harry Hiestand developed some of the offensive linemen that came here through at Notre Dame.
Still very early in the process, so I'm very hesitant to ask the question, but I'll ask it anyway. Is there any chance, with the way things are going right now, that the 19 offensive line class could be better than the 18 offensive line class?
I think so. I thought 2018 class finished pretty well with Jared Patterson and Luke Jones joining the class, but I don't know that Cole Mabry or John Dirksen are sure things by any means, both three-star recruits. John playing in a small school in Ohio, but certainly has a physical build, and I think Cole's a bit of a raw prospect. So I don't know that was necessarily one of Notre Dame's best offensive line groups. So that if they were able to get the three guys they have now, Andrew Kristofic, John Olmstead, and Quinn Carroll, and add one or two more guys like Azeek Correll, Salim Wormley, some other guys that are highly ranked four-star recruits in this class, I think it's easy to say that the 2019 class could be better than the 2018 class.
Okay, you mentioned some of the targets there, Tyler. How many guys do you think they want in this class? And how much is this Jeff Quinn's stamp on this? How much can we say, you know what, Jeff Quinn is really knocking it out of the park, or are we giving him too much credit?
I think there's a mix of that. I think it's easy to give someone credit when I think we've seen that. I think there's always, and we've talked about this before when Harry Hiestand was recruiting here, there's a larger talent pool when it comes to offensive linemen that want to come play offensive line at Notre Dame that are elite-level offensive linemen than there are other positions. So I think it's easier to recruit offensive linemen to Notre Dame than it is some other positions. But I do think it still takes a coach to take charge of the job, develop relationships with these guys, and convince those kids that he can develop them in the same way that Harry Hiestand did, or offensive line coaches before them have. So I think it all works together. I think we'll probably know more in a future recruiting class. I think it's certainly being able to ride off of having Mike McGlinchey and Quentin Nelson just going in the top 10 of the NFL draft. It makes the recruiting offensive line at Notre Dame a lot easier. But anyone that was recruiting against Notre Dame could easily point out, listen, that was Harry Hiestand. He's no longer there. Why do you trust that Jeff Quinn can do that for you? And obviously these kids are trusting that. So you can't really have one without the other, I think, at this point. But it's certainly working in Notre Dame's favor. In terms of the other guys they're looking to get, I think they would be happy with four. But if they could get a fifth, if it's a high-quality guy, I think they would certainly push it to five. Zeke Correll out of Cincinnati, who I mentioned, Salim Wormley out of Delaware, Julius Buelo out of Hawaii are all guys that are trying to get back on campus in June. So all three of those guys are four-star recruits on Rivals, and Zeke has already been on campus previously. So those are guys that Notre Dame is familiar with, and Notre Dame will continue to push for and see how things turn out in terms of getting four or five guys in this class.
The South Bend Tribune's Tyler James talking Fighting Irish football recruiting on WSBT Radio. Eric Hansen, Darren Pritchett with you at 5:38. Tyler, the Irish are hosting a defensive end target this weekend. Who is it?
Yeah, Etenito Rubin. I didn't want to make you say it, so I'll butcher it instead. 6'4", 255-pound defensive end out of Riverside, Missouri, just outside of Kansas City, Park Hill South High School. Notre Dame offered him back in February. He's only a three-star recruit as a strong side defensive end, number 25 according to 24/7 Sports and 38 at the position according to Rivals. But Notre Dame seems to be ahead of the pack when it came to identifying him. Just this past week, he had offers from Texas A&M, Alabama, Clemson, and Georgia. So if you're in on a defensive end that has offers like that, he must be pretty talented. So he's expected to get on campus here this weekend. We'll see how him and Notre Dame fit together, and we'll see if Notre Dame can start to make some ground there and work towards potentially adding another defensive end to this class.
Speaking of adding another defensive end to this class, I'm hoping I'm getting this right. I'll butcher this one. Aeneas DiCosmo included Notre Dame in his top five recently. What are Notre Dame's chances of being the top one in his list?
I think Notre Dame has a pretty decent chance. Aeneas was on campus last summer for the Irish Invasion, and he plans to get back on campus for an official visit in June. He is a 6'3", 220-pound defensive end out of Bergen Catholic in New Jersey, one of the top programs out in New Jersey. And I believe you said the name correctly, so I'm proud of you, Eric. They're up against Stanford, Clemson, Michigan, and Northwestern, so certainly some tough competition there. I know Michigan feels pretty good about where they're at with Aeneas, but the fact that he was on campus last summer is a good sign for Notre Dame. We'll see how things work out when he gets back on campus in June, but another guy that Mike Elston has pushed for as of late. Notre Dame didn't offer until earlier this year, but has gotten itself right in the mix to be a finalist.
Tyler, the Irish can't get everybody, so there was a group of players that committed elsewhere this week. Who stood out?
Yeah, a number of these guys we've talked about before, just wanted to kind of fill people in. Keith McGuire last Friday committed to Clemson, a linebacker out of Malvern, Pennsylvania. Adam Burghorst out of Zeeland, Michigan, a defensive end. He committed to Michigan State, plans to play both football and baseball there. He was on campus this spring at Notre Dame a couple times. Cade Stover, a big-time defensive end out of Lexington, Ohio, committed to the Buckeyes. Notre Dame had him on campus for a couple of games in the past. And Kenyatta Watson, the guy we talked a lot about this spring, I sort of mentioned that it was headed this way, but he did go ahead and commit to Texas on Tuesday, as expected. Notre Dame, having Litchfield, Adjovan, and Kyle Hamilton at safety certainly lessens the need for a guy like Watson. And so that's how that played out, and those guys all expect to play somewhere else besides Notre Dame.
Tyler, are there any commitment dates coming up, like in the next couple weeks, for anybody? Anybody Notre Dame might be close on?
The one that is in my mind is Nana Osafa-Mensah. I believe it is May 19th. So in a couple weeks here, we'll get his verdict. I believe he's making an official visit to Texas this weekend. So those are the two contenders, just like it was for Kenyatta Watson, Notre Dame versus Texas. I think Notre Dame has a better chance with Nana than they did with Kenyatta. And we'll see how things play out. Certainly this weekend we'll go a long way in deciding if Notre Dame's standing is strong enough to pull him out of Texas.
Well, Mr. James, even though we've talked a lot about the class of 2019, nine commitments in that class, is it true the Irish have extended an offer to a player from the 2021 class?
Yes, indeed. It sounds crazy, but it is real. Chaz Chambliss, a linebacker out of Carrollton High School in Georgia, which is actually the same high school that Tyler Newsom attended, he reported an offer. Notre Dame actually offered one of his teammates, a sophomore linebacker, Kevin Swint, on Tuesday. But Chaz is only a freshman. He had 97 tackles, 25 and a half tackles for a loss, and 12 sacks as a freshman. As big-time offers, Georgia, Florida, LSU, Ohio State, Michigan already. So it seems like a pretty advanced recruit, 6'3", 225 pounds. So a guy that Notre Dame wants to get on early, and that's the first guy that I know of that in the 2021 class that has added a Notre Dame offer. So we can officially mark the 2021 class as open for business.
Tyler, my last question is, as you look at this class, Darren asked me this, so I'm going to relay it to you. Big picture, do you think Notre Dame is in a good position to finish strong in this recruiting class? And what do they have to do to get to that point with nine commitments right now?
Yeah, I think they're in a good spot. I think I think we talked there earlier, probably about a month ago, and we're wondering, okay, what's going to happen with this class? And then they run off a string of five commitments in 5 days, and then add Quinn Carroll this week. So obviously in a much better standing now. I think it was an interesting process to figure out how everything would work out with the early official visits and that working out. And so I think they're in a good spot. I think there's certainly plenty of needs remaining. I think in my mind, quarterback it still needs to be addressed, and I think Notre Dame is continuing to evaluate guys. Tommy Reese is trying to figure out what Notre Dame can do at the quarterback position, because I don't think they want to pass on quarterback in the 2019 class, even though they do have a commitment in the 2020 class. And then continuing to acquire talent on the defensive side of the ball. I know certainly the 2018 class was very good on defense, but it doesn't hurt to keep bringing those guys in. And running back is certainly a position of need that Notre Dame needs to address. Even though they did get the two guys in the 2018 class, they need some more help in the 2019 class because the depth chart isn't very deep. So they need to figure out what they're going to do there. There aren't a lot of top candidates that seem to be favoring Notre Dame at this point.
Well, Tyler, I know you were a dominating lineman in high school, and you tried to win that Bell thing in college. So you're going to Canton, Ohio. Is there anything that you need to tell us about, maybe an award or something, since the Pro Football Hall of Fame is there?
I will not be claiming any awards, but okay. I will be covering the opening regional. It's actually the last regional that it's the Nike Camp circuit that Nike runs with the opening finals in July. So this is the last regional event, so a lot of kids will be out there in Canton trying to get invites to the opening finals in July. A number of guys that Notre Dame is targeting, Steve Carell, who we mentioned earlier, offensive lineman, Trey Wettig has an offensive line offer, Rodas Johnson, a defensive end, Mazzie Smith, a defensive tackle. So there are a number of guys that Notre Dame is in on. Hopefully I get a chance to watch, see how what they look like and how they perform in person, and then also catch up with them about where Notre Dame stands with them in their recruitment.
Very good. What else should we expect in upcoming editions of the South Bend Tribune and online at IndyInsider.com?
Yeah, we'll have some notes coming this weekend with Etanisa Rubin's visit, and then also certainly once I get back from Canton, I'll have plenty of coverage of the guys I speak to out there.
Tyler, great job as always. Greatly appreciate your time. Enjoy your weekend.
All right, see you guys.
He is the Fighting Irish Football Recruiting Insider for the South Bend Tribune. Tyler James, catch him in the South Bend Tribune, IndyInsider.com, and on Twitter at TJamesNDI. Always a great follow if you're into Notre Dame football recruiting. A lot of good information there. 14 minutes in front of the top of the hour. We have our My 5 question of the day coming up, and we have to kind of do a redo of a question we asked probably this time last year. And we're thinking about future Notre Dame football schedules. Who would you like to see the Irish play? Alabama has always been on our list. Alabama is going to be on the Irish schedule in 10 years. So I've asked Eric to put together a new 5-team list that he'd like to see the Irish play. He'll unveil that list coming up next from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
One question, 5 answers. This is the My 5 question of the day on Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Well, for years on this program, we've talked about who we'd like to see the Fighting Irish football team schedule, and we've had Alabama on the list for a long time. Well, Notre Dame and Alabama are going to play in 2028 and 2029, so we better put together a new list. Eric has his list of 5 teams that he would like to see the Irish football team schedule. We begin with number 5.
Yeah, I didn't put any ACC teams on here since they are in a rotation with Notre Dame. So I went with number 5. I went with a repeat customer. I'd like to see Notre Dame play somebody from the Big 12. And what better team to play than Oklahoma? That 2012-2013 series, especially the 2012 game, was incredible. And again, if you want to get in the college football playoff, you're going to have to play the Oklahomas and not the Iowa States. Not that Iowa State is that bad right at the moment.
Boy, if this stadium was full right now here in Cedar Rapids, they'd be booing you for downplaying Iowa State.
They beat Oklahoma last year, didn't they?
That's right. They did. Down in Norman, a huge underdog. Well, I think your experience in Norman in 2012 heavily plays into putting Oklahoma back on the list.
Right. I mean, who else would you put, though? Would you put Oklahoma State, which they've never played, or Baylor, which they've played a couple times to get into Texas? You know, I think let's just go with the name brand Oklahoma.
Number 4.
A different name brand, but this one from not in the Power 5, and that's Boise State. Obviously, you're not going to get the recruiting implications by popping into Idaho for a home and home, but I think it would really be a cool home and home for Notre Dame, a traditional power to play a modern power in Boise State.
You want to see the blue turf, don't you?
I've seen it before. I was there for a basketball NCAA regional when Indiana was out there. The Boise blue turf. It's very interesting.
Going through the teams that Eric would like to see the Irish football team schedule, number 3.
I had to kind of winnow down the SEC teams because there's a bunch I'd like to see, but I think Ole Miss would be pretty cool. Notre Dame played them a couple times, most recently in 85. They lost to them during their 1977 national championship season and then recovered and won the championship. But I think Ole Miss would be a real neat atmosphere and again, a team that's pretty good in the SEC in recent years.
Number 2.
Again, not a big recruiting push, but I think Notre Dame and Oregon need to play. They played a couple times. The most recently was 1982. They played to a tie in that game. They have some unfinished business. But again, it's a modern power versus a traditional power, and I kind of like those games.
We're going through the teams that Eric would like to see the Irish football team schedule in the future. Number 5, Oklahoma. Number 4, Boise State. 3, Ole Miss. 2, Oregon. And number 1.
Number 1, Notre Dame has not played them in football before, and it's about time, and I put Auburn at the top of my list.
Pretty good choice right there. I like that. And even though it's not a big recruiting weekend, I still want to see Colorado at Invesco Field at Mile High Stadium or whatever it's called now. I think that would be a fun game down the line. That will do it for our My 5 question of the day. I think we've had, through the years, Wisconsin at Lambeau as one of our choices as well. Or at least we've talked about it. So,
and it's there.
And it's there. We got that. So I think Auburn would be great. I think that would be a lot of fun to head down there and have Auburn come to Notre Dame Stadium. I really like that choice at number 1. We'll come back and wrap up Sports Beat in just a moment from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
Here's Eric Hansen with what's coming up in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune Sports Section.
Well, I have a feature on Shane Simon. He's a Rover, a freshman. He'll be coming to Notre Dame this summer and probably the freshman among the late arrivals that has the best chance to contribute significantly on the field. We'll have the South Bend City track meet, at least part of it, if the thunderstorms don't delay it or cancel it. Tom Noy had a hoops chat today. The transcript is online, and we'll have the best of his questions in the print edition tomorrow. We'll also have something on Jay Louderback, the longtime Notre Dame women's tennis coach for 29 seasons, coached both of Dick Vitale's daughters. He is retiring today, and much, much more.
And that's what I was just going to mention coming out of your comments, that Jay is retiring. 748 victories, leading the Notre Dame women's tennis program to 24 NCAA tournaments in 29 years as a head coach. Jay, congratulations on your retirement and a great run at the University of Notre Dame. Well, coming up, after an update from CBS Sports, we're going to be joined live by Nico Cavadas, Notre Dame freshman baseball player who played his high school baseball at Penn. He's having a really solid freshman season, hitting .274 with a .386 on base percentage, including a great game on Tuesday against Western Michigan, 3-for-3, couple of runs scored, and a couple of RBI. Nico will join us in just about 8 minutes here on WSBT Radio. We also have Rapid Fire, and we'll have a South Bend Cubs update. And I can tell you right now that it hasn't rained in about 40 minutes. There is still plenty of cloud cover, and the tarp is still on the field. So we are still expecting more rain before our scheduled first pitch at 7:35 South Bend time. So I'm making zero predictions on whether we play or not. I think I'm 0-for-2 this year. And try to figure out Mother Nature and if we're going to play or not. So I'm just going to stay neutral and say, I don't know. We'll see what happens. But we're scheduled for first pitch at 7:35 South Bend time. Eric, I will talk to you tomorrow from Peoria.
Wunderbar.
Whatever that means, I'll say it right back to you. We'll talk to you then. Sean will join me in just a couple of moments here on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Heard Dan Patrick talking about the Charles Barkley. He wants to punch Draymond Green, the Golden State. I love Charles. I think he's great for sports. He's very entertaining. But I think our job as media members are to be analysts and not to provoke
activity.
So I'm a little disappointed that Barkley decided to go down that road. That's just not good broadcasting. That's a low blow, and we don't need anything like that in the media from my perspective.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that a player like him, for example, Sal Pelantonio was on a Get Up, I think it was, with Greenberg and those guys this morning, and I caught part of him talking about it, and they were talking about, as journalists, you're not supposed to be a part of the story, you're supposed to report the story, and they... I think Michelle Beadle was saying, well, he is a former player. He's not a journalist. But I agree with the term that you used there, Darren, a media member. Whether you are a quote-unquote journalist, someone who studied journalism or not, I just think I've always liked, going all the way back to his playing days, Charles Barkley's truthfulness and just his bluntness and his willing to put it out there. But saying that you want to punch a player in the face crosses a line, and he went back and he apologized for it. And I think it was that same night, it was in the post game, the Golden State's post game, after Draymond Green did what he did when he was getting in Rondo's face and all that stuff, a media member passed on to him and told him what Charles Barkley had said. And Draymond Green, now Draymond Green, they're a lot of like Green and Charles Barkley when you think about it. And Draymond Green said, look, Charles Barkley and I cross paths all the time. We see each other all the time. If he really wants to hit me in the face, he knows where I am. If he really wants to, he knows where he can find me. But I'm glad Charles went back and apologized. And he said he still wanted to do it, but he shouldn't have said it and whatever. So, and I just go with what Draymond Green said. Look, if you really want to do it that bad, you know where I am. We see each other all the time. So.
Well, I am not a violent person. I'm not going to take a swing at someone, but right. I actually had kind of a fun conversation in a group setting with a bunch of guys talking baseball the other day. And I said something away from the microphone that if I was in a baseball scrum, I mean, one of those brouhahas that unfolds, there's one guy in Major League Baseball right now I would go and find and I would cheap shot him. Now, I would never say on the air who that was.
Right.
But in a fun setting, sure, we say things like that, but you just can't say it on the air.
Well, absolutely. I mean, there are FCC standards for one. There are a lot of things that all of us say off the air that you don't say on the air. Just when you begin with that and talking about punching a player who obviously, again, is Charles Barkley being a guy on TV who's commenting about these guys every night. It's just a line as entertaining as Charles Barkley can be. It's just a line that he never should have crossed.
My conversation was for fun. I think Charles was serious. That's also a difference. And,
yeah, exactly.
All right, let's get to rapid fire for this Thursday.
All right, fill in the blank on this first question. The Notre Dame football player you have the most confidence in heading into the 2018 season is blank.
Oh, so I can go offense or defense?
Correct. Either side.
I will go center Sam Mustipher.
All right.
I don't remember a bad snap last year. He has graded out well, according to everybody I've heard from. The coaching staff speaks very highly of him, and he plays a huge role in everything that goes on with that offense, so I will go with Sam Mustipher.
That's a good one, and when I thought about offense and defense and which way I'd go, he was one of the first guys I thought of on the offensive side of the ball, but I'm going over on the other side of the ball, and I think there are a slew of defensive players over there, but I narrowed it down between the two linebackers, Tavon Coney and Drew Tranquil. I'm going with Tranquil, though, and he handled the move from safety to Rover so well last year. You would have thought that he always played there, ended up being the team's third leading tackler, and he and Coney were the two guys in double figures and tackles for loss, and now he's moving inside to Buck linebacker, and based on what we saw this spring, the adjustment just seems almost as smooth as the move that he made last year. So if I was going scale 1 to 10, I would go a 10 for Drew Tranquil. I'm having a tough time spitting it out today in my confidence.
It's funny when you ask that question. Again, I don't get these questions ahead of time. The first name that popped into my head was Jerry Tillery.
Really?
That's the first name. And then I started thinking really fast, and I've just been impressed with the way Mustipher's come on strong. So I want to give him props because centers really never get any recognition unless there's a bad snap.
That's exactly right. It's interesting that you said Tillery, and he was in the handful of guys I was thinking about. Just think about the difference in how we feel about Jerry Tillery right now compared to a year ago at this time when he just all the questions that surrounded him before last year.
Absolutely. We were waiting for a season of no drama, and we got it.
Absolutely. Got nothing but good play from him. Okay. So, Cole Kmet right now, another member of the football team, brought him up with Nico Cavadas a little bit ago, the freshman tight end with the football team, pitcher for the baseball team. He has 8 saves and 2 wins for the baseball team right now. So, my question to you is this. Which number do you think will ultimately be greater? Kmet's save and win total at the end of the combined save win total at the end of this season, or the total number of touchdowns Irish tight ends score next season?
So tight ends, not just Kmet.
Correct.
Well, he's got 10 though in his back pocket already.
Right.
8 saves and 2 wins. I will say that his save and win total will be greater than the total number of touchdowns scored by the tight end. Boy, that's going to be close. And I could see Kmet and Mack each having 4 or 5. Maybe I'm underestimating them. Boy, more I think about it, more I want to change my mind. But I'll go with my first gut reaction, and that would be the save and win total, which still could increase over the next couple of weeks.
If they each had 4, I mean, that would be something. And I'll kind of break it down here a little bit. Because, again, obviously I have the benefit of knowing what the question is going to be. So I went back and looked at some numbers on this. But the four tight ends. Yeah, I know, right? The four tight ends for the Irish last year. Alizé Mack, Durham Smythe, Nick Wisher, and Kmet combined for 4 touchdowns last season. And so then you compare that the four Smythe had 2 years ago were the only touchdowns the Irish had. So each of the last 2 years, the tight end total has been four. And then if you go all the way back to 2014, they've totaled 11 touchdowns, the tight ends have. And now, I mean, there's enough talent there that we think that they get more production, get down in the red zone, those kind of things. They should have more, but I'm going to go with you based on that, just based on the touchdown total for the last 4 years, 2014 through 2017, for tight ends being 11. I'm going to say that Komet's total of saves and wins this season will be greater than the touchdowns. I'll say it'll be in the 7-8 range for the tight end. So I think it will increase based on what we've seen the last few years, but I think his save win total will still be greater.
All right, very good. Hey, we agree. That's a good question. That's a tough one. That's a real tough one.
Yep. Okay. Speaking, let's continue with some baseball. Do you buy or sell the need for the Cubs to send the struggling Ian Happ down to AAA like they did with Kyle Schwarber last year?
This is an interesting question because I was actually just thinking about this randomly yesterday watching the Cub game. This is tough because he's struggling, almost a 50% strikeout ratio. He basically has been replaced by Albert Almora Jr. in center field. You got to play Javier Baez every day at second base, even though I'm not a big fan of Happ playing second. He can a little bit, but not a lot.
Right.
Can't take Baez out of lineup right now. He is absolutely doing great things for this offense. So it comes down to he's a young player. Do you keep him on the roster and use him randomly, or is it better for him to go down to the minors and get some at-bats? If the strikeout total was not as bad as it is, I would say leave him in the majors. I know strikeouts are always going to be a part of his game. He's going to be a home run, walk, strikeout guy. That's who he is, and I don't think that's going to change. But in this particular case, the strikeouts are so high right now. He needs contact. I think a tune-up at AAA for a couple of weeks would not hurt him at all. And possibly if he finds success down there, comes back to the Cubs, maybe he starts swinging the bat better and overpowers Almora. I don't think Almora is locked in as the center fielder the rest of the year. I think he can be overtaken. So, again, I think because the strikeout ratio is so high right now, I would put him in AAA for a couple of weeks to allow him to relax, get away from the spotlight, and get back to just swinging the bat without maybe the pressure of the world on his shoulders. Because I think it's one of those things at the major league level, when you've been kind of now used to playing every day and now you're not, I would have a feeling if I was in that spot, I would press when I would get that chance to at bat. Like, the rest of the season was going to hinge on this at bat. That's the pressure you would put on yourself. Right. That's what I would do. Maybe Ian would not do that. So I think allowing him some pressureless at bats would not be a bad thing at this moment.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, even in an era and a time these last few years where strikeout numbers are going up and last month more strikeouts than hits across Major League Baseball, I mean, his are drastically up. 36 strikeouts in 78 plate appearances this season. So that's almost 50% of the time, half the time he's been to the plate, he's struck out. And by comparison, Javi Baez, who struck out 144 times last year, has the second most strikeouts right now for the Cubs. But he has 25 in 31 more at-bats than a Happ. So he has 11 fewer strikeouts, 31 more at-bats. And what you're saying, Happ is out of the lineup now. Almora is the better defensive center fielder. I don't know definitively that he's the better hitter, even though he's hitting a little bit better right now. But, you know, and I know Joe Maddon and the Cubs are saying that he doesn't necessarily need to go back. Happ doesn't. But they said that with Schwarber last year, too, and they ultimately did. And it's not like Schwarber fixed everything when he went back, but he was better after he came back from AAA. So I think it would do Happ some good to go back, kind of reset, get in a more contact mode and work on some things, and then come back up and have the chance maybe to be more full-time if he can get some things figured out.
Well, usually OPS plus 100 means you're an average player. By the numbers, right now, Happ is 80.
Ooh. So that's
an analytical look at where Happ stands right now.
Yep, so well below average right now.
So he hurts the team when he plays, theoretically, by that number.
Yeah. Yep, so yeah. So I think it would definitely be good for him to go back. Okay, fill in the blank on this next one. Dallas Cowboys tight end Jason Witten finally announced he's going to retire. He's going to join the Monday Night Football booth. So when you think of Witten, Darren, you think blank.
I think of a guy that was terrific for the Cowboys for 15 years, was dependable, was not flashy, and I start thinking, and this is just my initial reaction, he is borderline Hall of Fame. I don't think he's a lock. I think he's in the conversation.
Really?
I think he's borderline, but I think he probably gets in. But he just, I don't know, he was a good, rock-solid tight end that did everything well. So that's just my first reaction. Now, if I sat down and looked at the numbers, I might say, well, he's definitely in or definitely not in. But I think just my quick reaction, and that's what this all about, is that he's a borderline Hall of Famer. But I would probably lean toward the side of Hall of Famer compared to not being a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, and see, and I think because of the things that you're talking about, not flashy,
right,
dependable, people don't think of him in the same light as, like, Gronkowski or even
Tony Gonzalez.
And those, Shannon Sharp. Those guys. Yeah, because the tight end position has become so much a receiving position
in the NFL.
Yeah, and I mean, Jimmy Graham, even though he hasn't been as much the last few years since he left New Orleans, but I think Jason Witten, maybe behind Tony Gonzalez, is arguably the best all-around tight end to play. And I mean, I think his I'm talking about when you factor in blocking, because again, it is tight end, and a tight end by definition, his first role is supposed to be a blocker. And also, again, because of the fact that he's not this big highlight guy, with the exception of a couple. You think of the one where he gets the helmet knocked off against the Eagles and he keeps going to the end zone and all that. He's fourth all-time in receptions in NFL history and 21st all-time in receiving yards. And I'm not talking just tight ends. I'm talking fourth in NFL history in receptions, 21st in receiving yards. And you combine that with his blocking ability, and that's why I say he's one of the – if he's not the second best complete tight end, he's at least in the top five in terms of blocking and receiving. And I mean, Dallas drafted Martellus Bennett 10 years ago. And now when you think Martellus Bennett and Jason Witten, who do you think is the better receiving tight end? Don't you think of Martellus Bennett more as a receiving tight end?
I guess, yeah.
So you're not that high on Martellus Bennett either?
I'd still go with Witten. Well, here's something for you. Just Googling really fast, this is one group's opinion, just one. Athlon did something earlier this year on the greatest tight ends in NFL history. So let me run down the top 10 for you, okay? Number one was Tony Gonzalez, 6-time All-Pro.
Okay.
Number two, Antonio Gates of the Chargers.
Okay.
Number three, Shannon Sharp of the Broncos and the Ravens.
Okay.
Number four, Rob Gronkowski of the New England Patriots. Number five, Kellen Winslow of San Diego. Number six, Ozzie Newsome, Cleveland Browns. That's a Pro Football Hall of Famer. Mike Ditka is 7, Bears, Philadelphia, and Dallas from 69 to 72. John Mackey of the Colts and the Chargers, 8. And Jason Witten is number 9.
Okay. So now top 10.
Now see, and Dave Casper, Notre Dame, number 10. See, here's the problem. I have a little bias in me. Shannon Sharp was a very underrated blocker. He was a part of Terrell Davis's 2,000-yard season. He was a really underrated blocker, terrific pass catcher. I personally would take Shannon Sharp over Jason Witten. But again, maybe that's just bias in me being a Bronco fan.
Well, let's be honest. I mean, I have bias as well because I've watched his whole career.
Sure.
Too. But again, because he's not, and I agree that as a receiver, I would take Shannon Sharp. But if I was going to take the complete tight end, and again, I don't think that as many people realize, like Jason Witten had four 1,000-yard plus receiving seasons, and he had four other seasons where he was in the 900 range. So, I mean, he still caught a lot of balls. He just doesn't have that Shannon Sharp, Gronkowski. He's not as athletic as any of those guys, and so he's not thought of in the same light as those guys, again, because of what the tight end position has become. But when you take the whole thing, I think he's really underrated. And, again, I've already said that after Gonzalez, I think he's, as far as a complete tight end, at least a top five guy. And I agree, Antonio Gates as a receiver, Gronkowski, all those guys, just as a receiver, yeah, I would take those guys because they're going to make more highlight plays and get downfield more. But I think as a complete tight end, I think that Witten is really underrated.
You take Witten, I'll take Sharp, and we'll both be happy.
All right. There you go. All right. One more football question for you if you think we have time.
Sure, go right ahead.
Okay. Baker Mayfield's agent says the Patriots were considering trading up to number 2 in last week's NFL draft if Mayfield had been there. And there are other reports that say at least 6 different teams had Mayfield as their number 1 quarterback in the draft. So does hearing any of this stuff, and I know you've heard it by now throughout this week, does any of it change the way you feel about Cleveland going after Mayfield at number 1 with the number 1 pick last week?
I mean, I personally went into this draft knowing that my team had, from what I understand, Mayfield number 1 on their board. To me, if he is 6'3", he was the slam dunk, no doubt, number 1 overall pick in the draft. I think his skill set, his reading of the field, I mean, he was a very confident player. Some say that he has that it factor, whatever that it is. But the factor is, if he's 6'3", he's the number 1 pick. We don't even have a discussion about anybody else. Because he was 6 foot, it brought other people into play. So I would not be surprised if a handful of teams were not thinking about moving up to possibly take him. In fact, I think if he was on the board at 5, Denver doesn't take Chubb, they probably take Mayfield.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because until, what, a day or two before the draft, there wasn't a lot of buzz on Mayfield. There weren't a lot of guys who were talking about him with any of maybe even the top 5 picks. I think a lot of people thought that he was going to slip. But with all the deception and spy games and everything else that goes on before the draft, I mean, it just kind of makes you wonder if a lot of people were just tight-lipped because they were hoping maybe he was going to slip a little bit. They were going to be able to grab him later on. Because I agree with what you're saying. He's got all the physical tools and tangibles. Just has to kind of work on some of the things kind of getting the best of him, the emotions getting the best of him over the course of a game. But I agree. If he was taller, I don't think there would be really any questions at all. So.
Well, there were some reports about Josh Allen. Those tweets he had from high school were brought up by an NFL team hoping that those tweets would cause people not to take him and maybe they would fall. Right. Allen would fall to them. Now, whether that's true or not, I don't know, but it wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Me either. I agree.
That's Rapid Fire for today. It is 6:49 on your home of the Fighting Irish, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Sports Beat continues, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Coming up on tomorrow's program, we're going to have a couple of guests in the 6 o'clock hour. Nathan Beliva, the voice of the Peoria Chiefs, the Cardinals affiliate, is going to stop by. One of my favorite people in the Midwest League. We're going to talk about the Cubs and Cardinals series getting underway at Busch Stadium tomorrow night, running through Sunday. So we'll get plenty of Cubs-Cardinals conversation there as we talk to Nathan, even though he will not say the word Cubs. It's a long story. Also, we have... I'm not kidding.
All right.
We're known as South Bend in his world.
Oh,
Bob. Bob Cagna from the St. Joe chapter of the Indiana Football Hall of Fame. Their big event is coming up May 18th. Bob will join us live at 6:40 tomorrow night to talk about that event, name some of the people that will be going into the Hall of Fame, and let you know how you can get your tickets for the May 18th event. That and much more coming up tomorrow night on Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat here on WSBT Radio. Well, from a South Bend Cubs perspective, we're trying to score a run right now. We have not scored in the 2 games at Cedar Rapids. No hit on Tuesday, losing 10-0. Now, to be fair, last night's game was called due to rain in the top of the 6th inning, and Cedar Rapids won 5-0. We had second and third, nobody out, when, of course, they had to put the tarp on in preparation for heavy rains, which occurred. But South Bend so far in, let's just call it 14-plus innings in this series, no runs on just 3 base hits. They'll try to get going tonight against Cedar Rapids, and South Bend will send one of their best pitchers to the mound, left-hander Ricky Tyler Thomas. You know I hate the win in baseball in terms of a pitcher. Here's a prime example. He's 1-2, the ERA 1.42, 19 innings, 14 hits, 2 walks, 21 strikeouts. Do you think he should be 1-2 by those numbers?
Doesn't sound like it, does it?
Ronaldo Lopez of the White Sox, a 1.78 ERA in 5 starts. Going into his last start, they had scored 4 runs in 4 games for him. Mm. And he's 0-2. Kill the win. That's why you kill the win, because the pitchers, so much more goes into a pitcher's win than just his performance. So I think we talked about there's a push to get rid of the air. Now, I'm not in favor of that, but the win, yeah, that would not bother me in the least bit, because I think it's the most least important stat in all of baseball.
Yeah, I agree. You can have a horrible ERA and a lot of run support and rack up a lot of wins. Just, you know, and then complete opposite. Not give, just like what you were talking about with Ricky Tyler Thomas, not give up that many runs but not get run support. Hey, you don't have wins.
I'll bet you if we went back in time and went through Cy Young Award balloting, I wonder how many times the guy with the most wins won the Cy Young. In the past, wins were extremely important in that evaluation.
Right.
So I wonder how many times a guy won because of his win-loss record compared to the actual numbers. I know Rick Porcello had a bunch of wins a couple of years ago for the Red Sox, winning that award.
Yeah.
So anyway, it is the Cubs and the Colonels tonight. Ricky Tyler Thomas on the mound. 7:35 South Bend time, first pitch. No rain right now. The tarp is off. Maybe we'll get this game in. We'll wrap up Sports Beat next from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Sports Beat brought to you by Blackthorn Golf Club. Give them a call and learn about the Blackthorn card, which can save you a lot of money on rounds of golf. Add Blackthorn. Leavitt Insurance, the agency that rocks. See why at leavittinsurance.com. Goshen Heart and Vascular, be the hero your heart deserves. Visit goshenheartandvascular.org. And by Budweiser, great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. That's going to do it for Sports Beat. Cubs baseball starts in about 20 minutes. Sean, enjoy your evening.
Hopefully you get a full one in out there. We'll
That's the plan anyway. No rain delay on getaway day. That's a rule. We're off to Peoria after tonight's game. Right. Folks, have a wonderful evening. It is 7 o'clock at WSBT South Bend.